going to present the Brighton collaboration on behalf of our steering committee and on behalf of my other colleague that I work with, Ms. Epo Kompibutra, who was not able to come here today. So I'm going to share the experience of a global effort by the Brighton collaboration in promoting comparability of vaccine safety data, mainly through developing case definitions and guidelines for adverse events. This is an effort to harmonize the vocabulary of adverse events following immunization. I'm going to describe the need for standardized case definitions. As you've heard from Hector, there's lots of stuff that is not consistent. I'm going to highlight how to access our Brighton case definitions on the web, and I'm going to describe the usefulness of using standardized case definitions and their guidelines. The Brighton collaboration is an international voluntary collaboration with a mission to facilitate the development, evaluation, and dissemination of high-quality information about the safety of human vaccines. The vaccines are used worldwide, as you all are aware, and a common understanding of a common language in the field of vaccine safety is very essential. Standardization of adverse event reporting following immunization facilitates comparability and communication of vaccine safety data. This plays a very key role in the enhancement of trust in the current immunization programs. The current existing definitions that we have, they lack a common format. For example, the Council for International Organizations of Medical Sciences, SIOMS, and the International Conference on Harmonization of Technical Requirements for Registration of Pharmaceuticals for Human Use, ICH, have mainly focused on drug adverse events. And WHO definitions have not been graded or evaluated. And various companies have a wide range of definitions which does not allow comparability across various studies. The need arose from the fact that safety cannot be measured directly, but can only be inferred from relative absence of multiple likely adverse events. So assessing safety requires a standardized vocabulary, and that is case definitions, and the current lack of this standard vocabulary has hindered our ability to compare vaccine safety data. Comparability is important for an evidence-based understanding of safety of different vaccines and in different populations. So the solution was to develop a global collaboration to address this missed opportunity. The idea of the collaboration was conceptualized at a meeting of experts of vaccine safety in a town called Brighton, England in 1999. And the collaboration was officially launched at the fall of 2000. The case definitions are categorized by levels of evidence available, which will differ whether the data is gathered in a prospective clinical trial or in a passive surveillance system like VAERS, or whether it occurs in a developed or developing country. The main goal of the collaboration is to enable comparability of vaccine safety data across clinical trials, surveillance systems, epidemiologic studies across different geographic regions with four objectives. The first one is to establish the global collaboration of professionals and organizations concerned with immunization safety. And the second is to develop a single standardized case definition per adverse event with guidelines for data collection, analysis, and presentation for global use. And the third objective is to develop and implement study protocols for evaluation of case definitions and guidelines in clinical trials and surveillance systems. And lastly, to raise global awareness of the availability, educate about the benefit of use, and facilitate access to and monitor worldwide use of these standardized case definitions and guidelines for data collection, analysis, and presentation. The Brighton collaboration consists of a Brighton steering committee with seven elected members who provide the strategic guidance and set policies for the collaboration. And the current members are listed here. They are selected from industry, regulatory agencies, clinical care, academia, as well as public health. And the secretariat coordinates and manages the work of the collaboration to meet its objectives. And currently, there's three of us, all based at CDC, that are running the secretariat. The Brighton process includes selection of a topic by the steering committee, which is based on severity of adverse event, frequency of reporting, enhanced public interest, and emerging scientific needs. For example, GBS following Menactra, and Bell's palsy as a potential adverse event following influenza vaccination. We then use a six-step transparent process where we conduct a systematic literature search to identify any existing case definitions. And these then are used as a baseline to guide the working group discussions. And our working groups meet typically once a month over conference calls, and we have experts from various backgrounds who then eventually post the develop a draft, which is again posted in an online survey, or we specifically target experts in a particular field to review it. And we have the WHO together with the SIOMS committee that form a work group on vaccine pharmacovigilance who review our drafts and endorse them prior to publication, or they endorse those that are already published. And we disseminate all our case definitions and guidelines via a free download process at our website for global access that I will highlight later. To optimize the usefulness of the definitions, a three-level format has been adapted for use to be applicable in clinical trials and post-marketing surveillance. As mentioned earlier, the first level is a gold standard that requires specific evidence of information available to define. Prospective trials have the most use of this level. As you move lower down to level two and level three, specificity reduces as you increase sensitivity. And different case definitions have different levels of diagnostic certainty, ranging from level one, for example, fever, to level three, to three levels in intersusception. And I'm going to highlight this example of intersusception. The level one requires specific information on diagnostic tools, which are considered the gold standard for the diagnosis. So a definite case of intersusception is defined by various surgical and or radiological and or autopsy findings. Levels two and three are defined by a combination of various clinical and simple radiological studies grouped into major and minor criteria that have put footnotes to explain. And the next slide shows our guidelines, which are structured in three sections. We have data collection, data analysis, and data presentation. And now I'll mention some highlighted achievements so far. This slide shows the case definitions and guidelines which have been completed, and they've all been published in the Journal of Vaccines. Last year, in July last year, we had about 18 case definitions all put in one supplement at the end of July. So how do you access our definitions? First, you need to go to our website, which is accessing our website is www.brightoncollaboration.org. And here is what is displayed when you see our public website. And you click on the definition and guidelines tab, which takes you to the download published case definitions tab, which you click. And for you to access these definitions, you have to enter your email. It's very, very simple. When you enter your email, you are able to download any of our definitions, which are arranged in alphabetical order. And then if you are an old Brightonian, if you are now a listserv, you simply log in here with your credentials, with your username and password, and you are able to, you come to the download document with another menu of various activities that we conduct for you, and most of you are aware, like voting and accessing our online surveys, and the document download again will take you to downloading any of our documents, all arranged in alphabetical order. And to mention a few of our current projects right now, we have ongoing definitions we're defining. We're completing GBS. We have an overall local reaction. We're defining Bell's palsy and diarrhea, all in various steps. The nearest to be completed among these is Bell's palsy and GBS. And we have guidelines for surveillance systems and clinical trials that are near publication. And we have neonatal and maternal guidelines that are to be used in clinical trials. And we have an implementation working group that is focused in implementing Brighton standards in developing countries. We have ongoing evaluation studies, and there's a special SIOMS WHO working group that is exploring mapping of selected Brighton case definitions to MEDRA according. This slide here shows our group of participants. As of January this year, we have close to 1,700 scientists globally who are in our network. The background, this slide shows the background of our participants. They are all largely from regulatory agencies, industry, public health, and have several from the patient care and scientific professional organizations. And as I've mentioned, this is their background, and it shows the percentages, and largely many of them are from scientific or professional organizations and public health, and the fewest are from regulatory agencies. This slide shows an example of how Brighton studies have been, Brighton definitions have so far been used. It's more than this, but these are the few I could pick, and they are increasingly being used in studies. And how do you use these case definitions? This slide shows you examples of how you might use these definitions in developing a checklist for active follow-up, in validating your data, in conducting a standardized safety assessment so that the example that Hector gave us wouldn't occur. You'd be reporting the same condition all in a similar way when you send your reports to VAERS. And this will be have your improved value right there for surveillance data. And it could be applied in clinical trials, in developing case report forms, and they can be clearly used in data analysis where you have clearly defined outcomes and still have standardized assessments to be able to compare with your own, with other studies, and consistently collecting data in your own study. So you have your improved value of your individual study as well. So we've had, the Brighton has had some global recognition from these agencies listed on this slide, like WHO, our own CDC, the European CDC, FDA, and others listed here. So in summary, the Brighton Collaboration is a growing network of experts and scientists who are concerned with vaccine safety. The common goal is to facilitate data comparability across studies in different settings. We have a voluntary platform for almost 1,700 participants. The collaboration consists of various disciplines, as I've mentioned. We use a systematic approach and transparent scientific process. Our products are suitable as a global standard, and our case definitions can be accessed freely online. And I want to thank you all for listening to me.
Well, thank you to all of our speakers. And now we have a few minutes of time for discussion. If you have a question about one of the presentations, please step up to the microphone here in the middle of the room, and I'll open the floor to all of you. Are there any questions?
This is for Dr. Hector, because there is a reason you're here. Based on the study, the VSD, would you recommend that if it was your child, you would give him separate immunizations? Not in your practice.
Well, in fact, I have given my children separate immunizations because there were none available for them. My children received, when they were young, MMR, they received varicella vaccine, they received oral polio vaccine, and the old DTP. So does that answer your question? I'm reckless.
Yeah.
But specifically, our interpretation as an agency, the FDA interpretation at this point, is MMRV is a safe and effective vaccine. We license it as a safe and effective vaccine. We had some questions and concerns regarding fever and seizures. We found that we were right in being concerned, and we are continuing to investigate it. We haven't finished the studies. What we do know now is that for a specific window of observation, which is 5 to 12 days or 7 to 10, depending on how you see it, there are more seizures in those children. Does it mean that this extends to the 30-day window after vaccination or 42-day window after vaccination, depending on what biological plausibility interpretation you have? That we have to get final data from both studies to answer, and there, at that time I will be able to answer your question. But both vaccines are safe and are effective.
Mm-hmm. The VSD, what does that exactly stand for?
It's Vaccine Safety Data Link. It's a consortium of HMOs. What does HMO mean? Health Management Organizations, which basically sell their data without identifiers to the government.
Another MMRV question. Given the current problems with production or availability of MMRV, do you think this data is going to affect the manufacturer in terms of the future availability of this product?
Okay, the first thing is the problems they have had with manufacturing have nothing to do with this seizure signal. They are completely independent. I cannot respond really to your question, you know that, but at this point, I would say I don't think so. I think, as I said, that we consider both vaccines to be safe and to be effective. That's our take at this point, and we are continuing our work, which is to surveillance and continue the studies and inform you of what we are finding as we are finding those things, so you can take any actions you would like to take. That's our job.
Good morning. I'm Barb Cooter from Merck, and I'll be happy to address the last question for the group. We do plan to continue to manufacture all three vaccines as an option for all of you to use in vaccinating children against measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella. We really think it's important for all of you to do that, and we'll give you the option of what you think is the best choice.
I'm Kathy Colby from Naval Hospital, Beaufort, South Carolina. Do you think, sorry, this is Dr. Wang? Do you think that the pain that they say is associated with the HPV is one of the reasons you have the increased syncopal episodes? Because I know that the teenagers that I'm giving it to are like, you know, thinking we're shooting them. I mean, literally, rather than just a shot.
Actually, we heard patients say that the HPV is more painful than other vaccines they receive. And actually in clinical trials, the quadrivalent HPV vaccines was associated with more pains than its aluminum placebos, as well as the saline placebos. But These evaluate the pains day zero to day five, but we have no idea evidence or ideas whether this vaccination was associated with more immediate pains, which might be associated with vasovagal reactions more. So that might be one potential areas for further research.
It's going
I don't look for those information, so I don't think you can.
I would think that would be something to know. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen any sympathy in the second or third, only the first.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I did not specify those doses in my analysis, but maybe that's a good idea to look at these informations.
Okay, are there any other questions? Yes, please come to the microphone so everyone can hear. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm newer to immunization, so bear with me. Two of the questions that I asked when I came was, do you report every syncopal episode to VAERS? And people I work with said no. I don't know if that's right. And the second one was, well, is there a standard protocol for what to do with the patient when they have a syncopal episode? I mean, the answer I got was, well, we're all nurses, you know, we know what to do. So I just wondered if there are those two answers for me today.
Most of these syncope episodes will recover spontaneously with minutes. So I would say if a patient fainted right in front of you, the best way is first is to prevent her or him from injury. And if unfortunately an injury, he really fell on the floor, you have to check if there's any injuries associated with her. And then what you have to do is just follow the guidance to observe the patients until symptoms resolve. So if the symptoms doesn't resolve after a few minutes of observation and the patient keep fainting, you might have to call the emergency medical persons and send him or her back to the hospital for further evaluation, because she or he might be associated with injuries, with complications, or this might not be a simple vasovagal syncope.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
The answer is we don't know. Because we only receive.
You expect us to.
Yes. We'd like for, if you observe a syncopal episode after any vaccine, we would like to receive a VAERS report. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. We would like to receive these syncope reports to the VAERS.
Yeah, we would greatly appreciate that. That helps make the VAERS system stronger, the more data we can get into it.
And I guess tagging on to that question is that because of the different scenarios that you've described, there can be multiple individuals that interact with each of the children who have some sort of reaction if we're looking at that 30-day spectrum. And so then as the more people that report in that, the better you can use that information in data mining.
Is very interesting, but it really depends mostly on knowing who is reporting and who is not reporting and what's being reported or not. Meaning, to make it simpler, if everybody reports every syncope case, then we will have as denominator the whole population of vaccinees in the United States. That would be a perfect study. But short of that, if at least we know that every seizure which had a serious outcome, including trauma or convulsive syncope, were reported, then we would have as numerator all trauma and convulsive syncope after syncope, and as denominator, again, all the population of vaccinees in the United States. So those would be ideal scenarios. But passive surveillance is complicated. Nobody's really obliged, except for the manufacturers, nobody can be obligated to report, really, although the law says differently. So we will never really have a perfect passive system. That's a reality. So anything that takes us near there would be okay. Now, do we want every report of everything that happens after everybody gets vaccinated, including, I don't know, head injuries for car accidents or whatever? Sometimes they are pertinent. Syncope is a cause of car accidents, but others.
And actually, the CDC's vaccine safety data link will implement an so-called rapid cycle analysis for human papillomavirus vaccine, and syncope is actually one of the outcomes of interest. So we hope there may be more instance data or other results in the future.
I just had a comment on the lady that had the two questions. As far as the syncope episodes, I agree that every incident of syncope should be reported VAERS. I'm not sure how much is happening in her practice. With our practice, 10,000 doses a year, we probably only have less than five, which is, you know, it's not an unreasonable number to fill out a VAERS, and VAERS can be filed online very quickly. And her second question was what to do in the case of a syncope episode, and that really, there really should be a policy in place through your health officer or whoever is in charge of your immunization program that should include a crash box with some simple things, something as simple as a blood pressure cuff and smelling salts, leading all the way up, you know, to an AED. But that should, certainly a policy should be in place and a crash box in place anywhere that immunizations are given or vaccines are given.